Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Dr. Fred Harvey. Fred is here in person. Fred, I haven't seen you in weeks.
Months, in fact, I believe. Yeah.
When was the last time you were here?
I think it was like the first week of March.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's great to see you. Drove up from Sarasota. This is the Health and Nutrition Program where we take calls from listeners about health and nutrition, and we answer their emails as best we can. You answer them. I just send them on to you. And if you've got a question about health and nutrition, you can ask Dr. Fred. You can send your email into dj@wmnf.org. Well, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Really nice to be back. I like to do it in studio.
So we're separated by plexiglass, just so our listeners know. We're wearing gloves. There are things covering our microphones and your headphones. So we've got wipes everywhere, and we're trying to stay safe. And we're 6 feet apart.
We are safe enough, my friend.
Okay. All right. So you sent me...
Well, before we go there, I just wanted to say something. Today's Memorial Day. And I think that we're in the midst of a different kind of war. And I think it's really appropriate today to give thanks for our heroes in first line services. These people that are out there on the front lines taking care of really sick people and risking their lives, and many of them actually getting ill and dying. These people are serving our country in a way that the service people in the military do. And I thank them, and I think we all should actually have a moment of silence for them just now, just for a few moments. Again, God bless them. Thank them for their service.
All right. Well, that was very nice. So we're going to start taking some questions from listeners. But Fred, you sent me some information about vaccines. And it was historical comparisons of morbidity and mortality for vaccine-preventable diseases in the U.S. from JAMA, from the Journal of the American Medical Association. So tell us what is in this vast amount of material that you sent me that you want to talk about.
Well, the main reason I sent it is that there's another viral problem besides coronavirus right now, viral disinformation. It's causing problems for our country, and I think actually the world. And I believe that this viral problem could cause more deaths than coronavirus, because there is a lot of negative thinking about things that are true and a lot of belief systems buying into things that are lies. So I want to just talk about some things that we know that are true. There is a coronavirus, of which there are 150 or more, that made a trans-species jump from animal to human. And an epidemic started in China. A disinformation campaign from the Chinese government delayed action and caused the spread to the world. The virus spreads exceptionally easily, but its virulence is low except in select groups. Mortality seems to be 1% or less. And yet, unlike the flu, it's super transmissible and causes severe illness even in people that it doesn't kill. And also, some of the people don't get symptoms, and so they can transmit it without knowing it. Whereas in the flu, you know you've got it. And there's a big difference. So it transmits too easily. And so right now, there's a lot of talk about making a vaccine for this virus. Vaccine development is years away, more than likely, at least 18 months. We are hearing positive reports because they want people to have hope. But we don't really need to hope for the virus right now, or for the vaccine, because it takes a long time to develop a very valid vaccine. And we're even seeing that the positive reports from that company, Moderna, apparently only had 25% conversion rate to antibody positive. So it's not very effective. They had some effect, but it's not really that effective. But what I want to really emphasize here is there's a disinformation campaign that's global and that starts with a lot of the same dog whistle kind of problems that we see. I've seen George Soros' name show up in the anti-vax campaign stuff now. We know that anything against George Soros, who is a democracy fighter, an education and freedom fighter, any attack there is from fascist, ethnic nationalist type people that want to attack Jews, essentially.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of anti-Semitism when they attack Soros.
Yeah, and so when you attach him to anything, you have to be suspect that what's in the rest of the message is probably a lie. and propaganda. So, but they've substituted Bill Gates for Soros now. And they've created this scenario where a guy who's giving away his fortune to fight epidemics in the world, that he's actually trying to profit from it. He's actually giving the vaccines away. This is not profit. This is donation, charity. And so we have to stop thinking about him as someone who's going to profit off of vaccines. It saddens me that there's many functional medicine doctors and alternative type doctors that are buying into this disinformation campaign. And it's actually, you know, conflating with the anti-vax campaign too. And that also has a lot of poison in it, because vaccines are good. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm about rational use of vaccines. And what we know is that we've been using them for 500 years. The first one was for smallpox. In 1803, the vaccination word came up because vacca in Latin is cow, and they used cowpox active virus to inoculate people to prevent smallpox. It worked. They actually, I think, might have patented it in 1819 or something like that. It's that long. But 49 to 52, we had the polio, 63 measles, 68, we got the attenuated measles, 67 mumps, 69 rubella, 68 flu. But what's interesting is there were 500,000 deaths annually from measles before we started vaccinations. I saw a statement online that vaccines kill more people than they help. There's a 1 in 1 million chance of having a reaction to a measles vaccine, but 500,000 people in America dying every year from measles? I think it's a trade-off that we need to think about. In fact, I don't think we should ever have a mandatory vaccine program, but I think people should have the sense of self to be able to donate their body to risk a 1 in 1 million chance to save 500,000 people a year. As a donation, we could risk that out of love for our fellow man, sharing and working together. And so, you know, the risk of a polio vaccine is 1 in 750,000. Tetanus, diphtheria, 1 in 750,000. These are really low-risk vaccines. There is, however, the same thing happening, and this is where it comes together. COVID is not a coronavirus infection. COVID is a response to the virus in the body. And the reaction that people have to the immunization, the vaccine, is similar to COVID. And so it doesn't happen to everybody. It happens in select groups. People that are immunocompromised, people that are toxic, people that are sick, people that are old, people that are infants. So these are the people that we should really be cautious about vaccines. I don't know why the American pediatric system insists on a zillion vaccines in 3 days at the beginning of life or within 12 months. It's too much for the immune system. I think we can use better care here. But the bottom line is, vaccines are helpful. Vaccines are good. Do not throw the baby out with the bathwater. By the way, there is no vaccine for coronavirus SARS-CoV-2, and there won't be for a while. And even the one that looks hopeful is not really a vaccine. And we can talk about that too, but...
What is it?
Well, vaccines are putting viral material into your body and provoking an immune response. This is a new thing where we actually inject something called messenger RNA. Messenger RNA goes into your body, and then it goes into your cells. And then it's in your cells, it co-opts your own cellular machinery to create a viral protein. Amplification of viral protein creation in your cells is making a foreign protein in your cells. This is the fodder for autoimmunity. I'm concerned that if we have leftover mRNA, which supposedly clears rapidly, or leftover viral proteins in our cells, we are going to develop autoimmunity against our bodies years down the line. We've already seen it happening in the older hepatitis B vaccines. Young women were developing juvenile rheumatoid arthritis 7 years after they got the shot. And so I'm really concerned that this is not really a vaccine. We're using machinery in the cells that we've never done before. And I'm concerned that we don't have 20 years of data to show that we're not going to have a nightmare of health consequences from doing this. Herd immunity might work, but also social distancing and remembering that we can infect other people is really important. So it's such a complex issue, but I want people to understand that there's so much disinformation out there that it's going to cause division, strife, fear, and eventually bad decisions that are going to hurt a lot of people.
Over the last few weeks, there have been protests where people stand shoulder to shoulder, and they're protesting the closing of the country. And then in Arkansas over the weekend, people got into a large swimming pool, lots of people, and crowded around. And as people do in swimming pools where you can stand up, they were having conversations standing up, but they weren't maintaining social distancing.
Right.
So what's your take on all these people that think that they're impervious to getting it, to getting COVID-19?
That's a real issue. And because of the disinformation campaign from the top down, we've had a lot of people that have just decided to ignore this problem. And so I don't see a problem being in a public swimming pool, but if you're going to be in there and within a foot or two of somebody else breathing on them, I don't think that makes sense. We need to socially distance so the pools can't be crowded, but we know that there's a lot of people who haven't even acknowledged the presence of this. And so it's probably safer to stay away from them if you actually have concern about this and are thinking about it. We don't know the penetrance in Florida because we have had not enough testing of non-symptomatic people, so we don't really know. But it seems, at least in Sarasota County, the incidence is hovering around like 1 in 1,000, 1 in 900. And so the chance of you seeing somebody with it are low probably, but we're already seeing, when you look at the daily and stretch it over the last 2 weeks for Florida, you can see a trend up. Since we've opened up, we're seeing more cases. We're still seeing less deaths. We're seeing more cases. And so I think we need to pay attention here. And social distancing, or actually, I'd prefer to call it physical distancing, and protection, mitigation with masks and gloves, like we're doing here, and having a plexiglass. I don't like social distancing because we can be socially close while we're physically distancing. Mm-hmm. We can be on Zoom, we can be talking to people, we can FaceTime, we can do all kinds of things to be socially close. I don't like that word because, it causes more division in our psyche. We are physically distant, but we're socially together. We need to be together to fight this problem of disinformation that's actually, I think, worse than the virus.
Well, Fred Harvey is here. He's an MD. He has a practice in Sarasota, and this is the Health and Nutrition Program, where you can send in your comments or questions to dj@wmnf.org, and you can also call us up at 813-239-9663. That's 813-239-9663.
We have our first email. That's a good question. Mike in St. Pete asks if Moderna had 8 out of 8 positive. What I read was 8 out of 35 positive. So it's really not as good as it seems. And we don't even know if that 25 that have positive antibodies are actually immune. That's the problem. We don't know what the effect of this is yet.
Howard says, are there any herbal treatments applied externally that can reduce redness in the cheeks? Writes Howard in Georgia.
Well, redness in the cheeks could be a lot of different things. I mean, a ruddy complexion can be good. You could be vibrant. However, it could be rosacea. And rosacea is a problem that starts, I believe, in the gut. And so working on your diet would be the first thing to do. Clean up the diet, get rid of saturated fats, get rid of toxic animal products, reduce animal fat in general, reduce sugar, and reduce other triggers for rosacea like chocolate, and see if that helps.
Mm. Chocolate.
Love it. But.
Too bad. All right. Again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. You can also email Fred in the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Lynn in Clearwater. Hi, Lynn. You're on MNF. What's your question for Dr. Fred Harvey?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you for doing this. I'm glad you're talking about vaccinations today, because I would love to know, where do we get the information about safe vaccination schedule for newborns?
There is a really good question. Unfortunately, because of the medical establishment, you can't find a lot of protocols like that. But yet, if you think about the biggest problem that I've seen, and it's really hard to find data on this, it's supposedly out there, but I've heard a lecture on it, that the risk for the MMR, which is the one that has been anecdotally associated with autism, there's no direct correlation, but if you think about it in the same terms of the COVID issue, it will trigger the immune response in certain individuals. So what we found out is that kids who have had antibiotics within a couple weeks prior to getting that are at high risk. And kids that get it between 12 and 18 months are at the highest risk. After 3 years, risk goes way down. And after 7 years, I believe there's virtually no risk. Now, it's tough to consider MMR to wait until age 7. But if you wait until age 3, I bet your risk is much lower, to the point where if you have a healthy kid, no antibiotics beforehand, on good diet, on good vitamins, really stable, I don't think they're going to have a problem. But I think it's the people that are eating too much salt, too many toxins, too many artificial colors, flavors, sugars, and all that stuff. They are at risk. They're the problem child.
Wow. Okay, I have another question about vaccinations when, they're newborn. They've already had, I don't know how many. Is it possible for vaccinations or something in formulas to cause heart murmurs if they're not born with it?
I've never seen any direct evidence of that. Back, though, to the infant immunizations, I would refuse them. There is no reason to immunize at birth. None.
Right.
Because here's the thing. I don't believe that an infant should leave the family unit or be exposed to other people for quite some time outside the immediate family. We don't need to have that energetic or microbiome influence of other people. Infants should be protected like the jewels that they are, and hoarded and cared for and not released to the public for months, essentially. Slowly, one at a time kind of introduction of the microbiome. The problem is, in our slave society, where everybody works, we don't have home care. And we don't have a system that allows for that, that pays for that. This is something that maybe could come out of our crisis here. Maybe we rethink. If we can get a progressive government that actually helps people to enable some home care in the first 3 months, so that child leave is actually mandatory, we could have a better society. We could work on that infant nutrition, which is the most important time for these kids to start developing brains. And then those first 7 years where we really grow the brain, we need to have those kids constantly monitored for good nutrition, because we'll create a society of dullards that can't function if we don't get nutrition in those years. Anybody living in poverty now in this luxurious country that's being deprived of good nutrition is suffering a fate that shouldn't happen here. We should be supporting these people because we'll have a much stronger country. And if we have that, then the immunization thing won't be as much of an issue, because you won't be leaving the house and exposing them to these things.
Amen to that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
you're
Lynn.
So welcome.
You guys have a great day.
You too. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Just going back to the topic at the top of the show, when you see, and it happened over and over again the last month on Fox News, hydroxychloroquine is the answer.
Right.
When you hear TV hosts with a great deal of certainty, as Noam Chomsky was talking about a moment ago,
That was an interesting show.
Yeah.
I want to listen to it again.
Saying that, you can take this safely. What's your take on that? Do you know the drug?
Not sure why they want to kill people. I don't understand the necessity of Fox News to actually ask people to find a way to commit suicide. Because hydroxychloroquine is not without risk. And again, it's the same people that would get COVID that are at risk for the problems with hydroxychloroquine. Toxic people get more toxic. Most people who don't have that could survive it. And that's why it's actually available as a drug on the market, because it hasn't killed that many people. But there is that select few that goes blind, has kidney failure, or worse.
Heart trouble, too.
Sudden death from an arrhythmia.
Yeah. Let's go to Clark in Ybor City. Clark, thank you for calling. What question do you have for Fred?
Hey, when I tuned in, he was just talking about the pools, and I had a comment on the pools. I don't want to take up too much of your time because now it sounds like you're talking about vaccines, and that was just a little part. But
yes.
did Dr. Harvey say we live in a slave society? Did I hear that right?
That is what I said specifically. Yes, we are enslaved to the system.
Man, well, Harvey, I run political campaigns, Dr. Harvey. If you want to run for president, I will make sure it happens. You are awesome.
Well, thank you so much. If I give it consideration, I'll give you a call.
I'm a volunteer at the station. Rob can get you in touch with me. If we ever get to go back. Rob, never mind. they know at the station I've been dealing with them. Mold at my apartment is making me sick, and so I've been staying at hotels. And the first two, and it's been going on for 5 weeks. So the first two, the pools weren't open. You know, nothing was open.
Yes.
But these last two, the pools have been open, and I was very confused because I thought, like you were saying back there, that a pool would be the last place I would open. You know, and so that there's no way to have social distancing or a mask, and there's mist around, you know, the droplets would combine with the mist and be hanging in the air more. And two of the hotel people told me, no, it's perfectly fine because the pool water is killing the virus. And that might be true of, you know, what falls into the water. But I just to hear somebody else saying what non-scientific me was thinking was very I appreciated it a lot.
You know, I really agree with you that when it's crowded in the pool, it's not possible. Social distancing isn't possible. But if you're in a pool and there's, you know, 10 people there and they're spread out in the pool, you're probably pretty safe. Again, it's about physically distancing from that person. And then the chlorine in the water probably will disrupt it. It's not a good place for viruses to hang out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for your call. And thank you, Rob.
You're so welcome.
Clark, thank you. 813-239-9663 is our phone number here. Here's Harvey writing in saying, given the reports of false indication and those sailors who had varying test results, I'm not terribly confident in the tests. What about you? And I'm not sure what Harvey's referring to.
So I think he might be talking about the sailors that tested positive a second time.
Oh, okay.
You know,
there's Roosevelt.
There's a question about, see, PCR testing is what they're using, which is polymerized chain reaction, which takes a piece of DNA and amplifies it to look at it, or RNA, if it picks up a piece of something, it doesn't mean it's got the whole thing. And the piece that this PCR is looking for is a specific piece. But when someone sheds viruses and is excreting them after they've been deactivated, you might get pieces of the DNA/RNA that show up on the testing. So we're not really sure if these are reinfections or shedding or chronic carrier states. No one's certain. I do trust PCR testing to the extent that it can actually be very sensitive and pick up all kinds of stuff, but it could have false positives. I don't have a problem with false positives because we can isolate those people. False negatives are the ones that bother me. And there hasn't been much false negative testing. Even in the antibody testing, when they were inaccurate, they were more false positives, which means we'd have to sequester more people, which is safe rather than sorry. And so, though there is variability in the accuracy, we're going in the right direction, false positives. So I'm really trusting that.
Our next caller is Celia in Winter Haven. Hi, Celia. You're on with Dr. Fred Harvey. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the virus, of course. And what's going on is I'm a poll worker, and I am a branch manager for early voting here in Polk County. And I have been thinking about keeping the staff and the voters safe from the COVID-19 virus. And so, of course, masks, sanitize everything that we can get our hands on, you know,
yes.
We wipe down the pens and stuff. But I have an idea, and I'm not sure if it's a good idea or not. I have a little air filter that I run to clean the air in my house, and I was thinking if the air filter was sitting on the desk between the staffer and a voter, because sometimes people have issues, they have problems that we have to solve, so there's talking going on. Would that air filter pull droplets out of the air and clean it, or
that's what they do.
Too small.
I just don't know how what kind of volume it is. So yes, based on volume, it depends on that. That's the area it can cover. So a small air filter might cover 100 square feet. A larger one, 500 square feet. The other thing that I think makes sense is, since we know that the transmission outside is much less, having big fans that just blow across the area to circulate the air. Maybe even though it's warm and humid, keep doors open so that we can have a flow through of air in open places, or consider moving, it's tough to do it, but move voting to an open pavilion so that there is fresh air movement. These things could all be effective, but, you know, indoors is where we get the most, you know, if people are hanging out in there, they're spreading their droplets, and the longer time you spend in that place, this is what we're knowing, it's time spent in proximity. So the poll workers are at most risk. The people passing through to vote could deliver the disease and then split and not get it.
So if I, like, crank the AC and everybody wears a sweater, that would help too.
Well, you could just turn the fan on.
Okay.
And just blow it at high speed. But you might also want to get, like, a big, you know, 3-foot room fan and just have that sucker blowing at the end of the room, just blow air across everybody.
Okay. I can probably do that. All right. And so an air filter actually does get the virus out of the air.
Sure. Yeah, it'll pull particulates out.
Okay. Okay. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Celia. 813-239-9663 is the number to call us here in the studio. Jane writes this: thanks to your guest for his intelligent approach to help us all heal at this stressful time. I especially appreciate his shout out to our healthcare on this Memorial Day. They are the heroes of the day, many of whom have lost their lives, writes Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you for that. And we'll go back to the phones, and let's see who's been holding the longest here. It looks like Fred in St. Pete. Fred, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Morning, Rob. Morning, Dr. Fred.
Hi, Fred.
God, I wonder if we can imagine, you know, a world with WNF and not Fox, you know?
We need the spice in our life.
Okay, you got me. I'll ask my question, then I'll get off the phone and listen off air. I'm in a high-risk group, but I still have to eat and, I guess, buy beer. So I have to go to the supermarket.
Right.
You know, I wear a mask. I disinfect. I quarantine the food when I get home where possible, wash stuff, et cetera. I guess my question is, you know, I see these, I go to, like, maybe 3 different Publixes, a local health store that's pretty crowded a lot of times. And knowing some of the people pretty closely, it doesn't seem like the actual workers are, you know, I haven't heard of a case where they contracted the virus. And it would just seem with the number of people they're exposed to every day, you know, that would put them in a high-risk group. So I was just wondering your thoughts on that and what kind of risk then just a casual shopper has. And then, two, what about those hand dryers that blow air in the bathroom?
Oh, good question.
I'll get off the air.
All right, Fred, thank you.
Yes, Fred, good question. So the dryer issue, yeah, it spreads germs. So preferably not to use those if you have germs on your hands. If you just washed your hands, there shouldn't be many germs left on them if you've done a nice 20-second wash under the water. So I don't know how much that's true. However, if you think about it, it's sucking air in at high speed from all over the room to blow at you. So it's pulling everybody else's microbes in too. So I would avoid those things henceforth.
You wanted to know about the workers at the grocery store.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the overall thing. If you think about, and you're in Pinellas. I don't know what the incidence relative to population is there, but for Sarasota, I look at it this way. If it's around 1 in 1,000 and there's 100 people in Publix, 1/10 of those people probably has the disease. And so, you know, that 1/10 of one person that's walking around there that doesn't have a mask on might be risky to me. I have a mask on. I avoid them. I walk away from them when they're in the store. But I've been really fortunate when I've been shopping to see most people have masks. Most companies now have been diligent and their employees are wearing masks, often with gloves, not always. But, you know, I think I feel safe enough going out.
I was looking up just quickly how many employees at Publix, the grocery store. I don't know about Fred's grocery store because he talked about the local health food store, I think. But April 11th, the second employee at a Dunedin Publix tests positive. May 6th, three Publix employees test positive for COVID-19 in Orange and Osceola counties. COVID-19 infects Publix employees. That's dated March 31st, 2020. That's a South Florida report. And then Orlando Weekly, dozens of grocery store workers have died from COVID-19. So I think one of the most dangerous places to be was in the grocery store before they put up the plexiglass.
Yes.
And before they let people wear masks as cashiers or baggers.
Right.
Now they're letting people wear masks and baggers are wearing masks. But, I think up until those times, that was very dangerous for grocery store workers.
Yeah, it sure was. And I'm so glad to see that they stepped up and have protection now.
Yeah. 813-239-9663. Joy writes this. Thanks for the program. When is the time frame for a Hep B series that has a correlation to RA?
So that was the hepatitis B vaccine that was present in the 1980s. The original one called Recombivax. They don't use that any. That's called Heptavax. They don't use that one anymore. They use Recombivax and future generations of laboratory created ones rather than virus particulate ones.
All right, let's take some more phone calls, and we're going to go to Dana in Plant City. Dana, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today? What would you like to ask Fred?
I just wondered if he was familiar with Dr. Kate for Hateful Eight seed oils and what he thought about that, if he agreed with her research.
Dr. Kate and the Hateful Eight, huh?
Yeah, no. We just saw that on Bill Maurer the other night, so I was just
I have not heard of that one.
Is she the cancer specialist?
Well, she said that the Hateful Eight seed oils, which included sunflower, safflower, canola, that they break down, I don't remember all the scientific jargon, but they break down something in your immune system and you're not able to fight off allergies. She included the coronavirus in that and all these ailments that people have to take medication for.
So that's interesting. And I have heard some things recently about people really being unhappy with processed oils. And there's a possibility. I have yet to see definitive research on that. I do know that the research on rapeseed oil or canola oil is that it's probably not something we want in our bodies. But organic sunflower oil has lecithin in it, and lecithin is brain food, liver food. It heals nerve sheaths. So I'm not sure that we should take such a polarized view of any of the foods that we're eating. There's goods and bads about all of them, and some are much more bad than good. So, you know, non-organic canola oil is sprayed with pesticides, and it's a poison oil anyway because it doesn't fit in our cells the right way. So, yeah, I can see some of them being avoided. And large quantities also. We should be getting our fats from eating nuts and grains and avocados and other things that have good quality fat in it, not getting it from, you know, jars of processed product. But extra virgin olive oil that's unfiltered and has the bitter green color flavor, that's super good for the body. Prevents cancer, heart disease, and all kinds of things. So that's a good oil.
All right, so maybe the way to look at it is look for the good oils.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's it. I'll have to do some research on the Hateful Eight. Maybe we'll talk about that one again.
Yeah. We're going to go back to the phones, and Diane in Bradenton has been waiting a long time. Diane, thanks a lot for calling in. What's up?
Thank you. If no one has been in the schools, for instance, for months, why is the necessity for the deep cleaning as it relates to the COVID-19?
Well, it's probably not necessary, but it's a good precaution to make everybody feel safe enough. There's the thing, safe enough. What methodologies can we use that aren't too invasive to make us feel safe enough? And I think a deep clean on the school is perfectly valid. It probably needed it anyway.
Yes.
All right, Diane, thanks a lot. All right. And let's go to Tim in Palm Harbor. Tim, you're on with Fred Harvey. What's your question?
I just wanted to talk a little bit about the vaccines and the immune system. I know that we like to
worry about social distancing and all these other things, and I think there, for some people, this is probably a good idea. But how much emphasis have we been putting on the immune system? I mean, we live in a time where we live in the Sunshine State. Most people are vitamin D deficient.
Right.
People do not get selenium in their diet the way that they should. We certainly don't consume enough zinc and micronutrients to boost it. In China, there was a study that they were recently doing, investigating SARS-CoV-2, and they were looking at taking TCM herbs like ginseng, astragalus, licorice root, Japanese juniper. All of these, which they showed have an effect in reducing ARDS, acute respiratory distress syndrome. I feel like every time we listen to the media, we need a vaccine, need a vaccine. And when you look at the track record of every time we rush to get a vaccine, it's not good. In 1976, with the swine flu vaccine, didn't work out so good. When they had huge RSV infections, that vaccine didn't work out so good. The H1N1 vaccine did not work out so good. There are studies showing that it caused narcolepsy in children. So I wish that there was a greater emphasis on boosting the immune system, living in a way where we're hardening the defenses instead of hiding in a hole, wrapping ourselves up with a sheet, and going out in public terrified. There's always going to be risk to what we're facing, but we have to take the proper steps. I'd like to hear your thoughts, Doctor.
You are on target. I agree with you. And it's one of the failures of Western medicine in that we've always gone for the agent, the infectious agent, always looking for something to name, blame, and tame with some sort of intervention. But the bottom line is, even Pasteur, when he actually discovered the bacteria, Pasteur and his associates knew that it wasn't the bacteria. The contemporary thought then was that it's the terrain. In other words, it's your body that makes you ready to get the infection. And in this case, not susceptible to the infection, but susceptible to the inflammatory cascade that the infection triggers. So COVID or SARS-CoV-2 is a trigger for an autoimmune inflammatory disaster. And we can prevent that if we do the smart things. There's so much connectivity here on last show, we talked about the salt connection to the Kawasaki syndrome. And so excess salt sets up one set of white blood cells to trigger a horrible result. And it will also affect several other lines of white cells. So eating a processed food diet is killing Americans in many ways, not only just with COVID, but with other autoimmune and inflammatory illnesses and with degenerative disease across the board, heart disease, stroke, arthritis, diabetes, dementia, all these things are being caused by this immune cascade. So yes, I agree with you. We need to focus on nutrition.
Hey, you think, doctor, maybe we should prescribe a national detox? Maybe that might help us?
We need to rethink a lot of the things we're doing nationally and maybe detox the illness care system so that it actually focuses on health care.
Maybe a little bit both. All right, thank you so much.
All right, Tim,
thanks,
you.
Tim.
Anonymous says, I would like clarification regarding being around people socially distanced who suspect they had the virus between January and March. Some whom I have encountered are waiting to be tested. They state they feel normal now. I am surprised how many have shared this. Are they still at risk to transmit? Also, we keep hearing about testing. Why isn't there public service announcements insisting everyone be tested? It seems so many are acting like it's all over now, writes Anonymous. So I don't know where to...
Well, I mean, they're all really good statements, and we have had obfuscation and disinformation from places on high. We are not having leadership to guide us with solid evidence and solid plans. It's been helter-skelter crazy, and all of your questions are valid. There's not answers for basically any of it other than we need to have a better approach.
The next caller comes to us from Bradenton, and Annie is in Bradenton. Annie, what's your question for Fred?
Oh, hi. It's not so much a question as a comment. I just left Publix store in Palmetto, and I just wanted to notate to the gentleman there that there was about 10 to maybe 15% of folks wearing masks, not including the employees. And so, you know, about 90% of the people were not wearing masks, and no one was wearing gloves. And I thought that was, I don't know, eye-opening for me. And it just seemed like people were really cavalier. They weren't going down the aisle in the right direction, and there was no consciousness of distancing. So it was a little intimidating for me.
Yeah, it's understandable. These people are antisocial. They are, if you think about the way Asian people have responded to this, where together they decided to help each other in countries that weren't authoritarian, like South Korea, Japan, I mean, they have a totally different approach because they care about their neighbor. Here, libertarian ideas and personal rights trump caring about your neighbor. I don't know what happened to the golden rule. Christ's right. message has been lost on this entire population. Well, not the entire population, the 10 to 15% that are wearing masks where you are, and actually the 90% that are wearing where I am. My area must be more socially conscious. I don't know. It seems weird, but I don't know why. I've been to the store and almost everybody has masks on. And I hear that there's other people like you that are getting assaulted essentially by maskless people. I don't understand why they can't have that courtesy. It's weird.
Yeah, I waited to the end of this weekend to go to the store just because I didn't want to be in, you know, en masse with non-masks. And so it really surprised me. We're in Manatee County, and I think our numbers have never leveled off. In fact, I think they're still rising.
They're rising again.
So, yeah. So, I mean, to me, this seems like a more dangerous time to go out into the community, especially an unprotected area, than it was before when people were on lockdown, because now everyone's coming out of the woodwork and a lot of people really weren't paying close attention to the things they need to do to stay safe and to keep others safe prior to that. So, I don't know. I think people need to be a little bit more cautious, a lot more.
Well, let's hope those Palmetto public shoppers are listening.
I think it's beyond caution. I think they need to be more socially conscious and aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, they're in the midst of a disinformation campaign that minimizes all this from places on high.
Without doubt.
You know, people that minimize it and take hydroxychloroquine. How bizarre.
Mm. All right, Andy, thanks a lot.
Yeah. Take care, y'all.
All right, thank you. Dina writes this, I want to resume lap swimming in an outdoor pool. How would you assess the risk, and when would it be safe to fly on an airplane, writes Dina.
So I think we addressed the lap swimming, physically distance. Keep in your lane and you're probably safe. And then it's safe enough to fly in a plane now. Use your precautions and physically distance. Take your mask. Take an ionizer they have personal ionizers you can wear around your neck. Wear gloves. Have your disinfectant spray. Use a nasal spray like Clear Life, which is an antifungal, antibacterial, antiviral, homeopathic, safe and easy. Basically, it's saline with some homeopathic remedies in it. And so it keeps your nose moisturized, which is key because you don't want to dry out. That's where you get openings for infection.
Dr. Fred Harvey is here. He's here every other Monday hosting the Health and Nutrition Program on 88.5 FM. And our next caller is Ann in Seminole. Hi, Ann. What's your question for Fred?
Yes, good morning, all. Stay well. My question is, I'm a big believer in proactive health.
Yes.
And protecting your immune system. I've been doing some research on the correlation between vitamin D. The elderly are insufficient in D. People of color, ethnicity, Chinese, and Italians are all lacking vitamin D. And I don't hear much about pump up your vitamin D so this virus doesn't get to you or protect yourself. I don't hear a lot about it. And seeing that people are quarantined, especially in New York City, they're really lacking vitamin D. So why are we not hearing about protecting your immune system and build yourself up, especially people of color that are, for some reason, lacking vitamin D?
Well, they're lacking it because of the way their skin works, and they need more sun than the rest of us. However, I've tested hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in Florida, and 90% are insufficient in vitamin D. It's not limited to those groups. everyone is low. And so everyone needs to take at least 2,000. I take 5 to 10,000 a day. More than 10,000 a day, you really need to get a doctor to check your vitamin D level or go to any lab test now and order your own, because you don't want to go too high. I've never seen a problem with people that even went over the 100 top threshold, but it could happen. If you read the Institute for Functional Medicine, IFM.org, has white papers on immune boosting for this. Great evidence-based work. They recommend 5 to 10,000 also, and I've been promoting it through my practice on this radio show, and unfortunately, Western medicine doesn't look at health promotion. They look at illness treatment. Mm-hmm. So they don't have this approach. They don't look at what I'm talking about as valid, because I'm not treating something. I'm helping people.
It's crazy. And they're showing that people who have the COVID and they test them are big time lacking vitamin D. So there's a correlation. And I understand, like, the task force that President Trump does every day, they don't mention.
They're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to.
No, he has a script for them. They're only allowed to say basically what they're allowed to say. Look at what's going on there. This is a fascist regime controlling the speech.
Okay. So you're a big believer that vitamin D could protect you from this virus.
Well, we have evidence that it protects you from lots of other viruses, including coronavirus, not specifically COVID SARS-2, but definitive literature evidence of it reducing coronavirus.
Thank you. You're wonderful. Thank you all.
Glad to help.
Thanks, Ann. And let's go to Joel in Tampa. Okay. Joel, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Yelling.
Joel? Hi, Joel.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
There you are. I'm Empirical Me, and I live in a van down by the river.
Very good.
And why is it, Doctor, that more people can't be individually responsible for their health?
Good question.
I realize that in this environment, we have so many insults from alcohol, chlorine, and et cetera, and chemicals. Why is it that we can't be more individually responsible right here in our community radio area?
I would love to see that. I totally agree with you. It's a great question, and it's a rhetorical one, because why? Lots of things. We could probably spend 5 hours on talking about the reason the American psyche is like it is, but that's not for this show.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's fair to say we've been doing a health show here on MNF for 20 years.
So yes.
We try to give people information, they can use it, and self-empower. So, Joel, thanks a lot. Thanks for the question. Here's an anonymous person saying, I have a COVID test scheduled tomorrow. What are the CDC guidelines I must meet? Writes Anonymous. Not sure what they're aiming at there.
Well, at this point, you don't need any guidelines for certain tests. Like, I can order a antibody test through Quest Labs on any of my patients right now that want to get it. The nasal swab is still not available except at testing centers. And to get the nasal swab, I believe you have to meet the criteria of either symptoms or contact. And so without those, you probably won't get tested, but you might. I don't know. I haven't.
There are places. Hillsborough County will test with or without.
With or without. So yeah. Now that's available. Okay, yeah, good. So we're going to get more people tested. Excellent.
Mike in St. Pete says, aren't plant omega oils only 5% compared to much higher percentages in animal fats? He's suggesting that it's better to, if you're trying to get your omega-3 oils, he's suggesting it's better to eat animal fats. Any truth to that?
So, actually, there is. The omegas in plants are several steps away from the ones that get incorporated into our brains. And so, in people that have metabolic problems, they may not be able to actually get the right amounts of them, and then you end up with too many omega-6s because the omega-3s in plants are mixed with omega-6s, and so you may actually go pro-inflammatory. So a little bit of fish oil or algae-derived DHA. So you can get a plant-based one, but you have to take a lot of it, and it's really expensive to take the amounts you need to get the levels up there. So I would say if you can do it, sustainably harvested fish oil of high quality is your best choice to supplement or eat sardines.
Let's go to Bobby in Sarasota for our next call. Bobby, you're on WMNF. What's your question?
Well, I just have a quick comment because I had to get a COVID test because I'm having asthma the other day, and I was directed all over the place and had a problem finding one, including the emergency room at Memorial in Sarasota, waiting 3.5 hours and then being told, no test here unless you're admitted.
Right.
And then I know that at the UTC Mall, there's a 4 or 5 hour waiting. And I told my doctor, I said, you know, there's nowhere, none of the labs will do it. They'll do the antibody. But
right.
Not. And so she called me back, and we have this Robert Taylor complex here.
Yes.
in Sarasota.
Correct.
I went there. There were 3 people ahead of me. I was there less than 15 minutes. No questions asked except for my name and birth date,
right,
and phone number, and had it under 15 minutes.
Sarasota's public health is an excellent system. I really appreciate what Sarasota County's public health department does. They're great.
But the information's not out there that it's that easy. I was stressing out big time trying to get, or was tearful trying to get this test. And then that little bit of direction, I thought people should know to check there.
I'm glad you brought it up. I've been recommending people from my practice to go to the health department from the start because they're efficient. They take care of it.
Well, is the Robert Taylor Complex the health department?
That's part of the Sarasota. It's run by Sarasota Public Health, yeah.
Well, very good. I just thought people may want to know that.
All right, Bobby, good information. Thank you very much. Thank you. Brian writes this, I booked a flight to North Carolina for the 1st of July. What precautions should we take, writes Brian.
Once again, I'll repeat it. Make sure you're physically distancing. Have your sanitizer. Have maybe an ionizer. If you can get one online, you'll probably be able to before you leave town. Just a little thing you wear around your neck, like a personal air cleaner. Although the air in the plane is exceptionally clean. The ionizer is for the person next door to you because the air recirculates like every 20 minutes in the plane. It is some of the cleanest air on the planet. It's filtered. It's from high up in the atmosphere, so the particulates aren't there. It's good stuff. But you have to deal with the people next to you, not the cabin air. And so, again, you're dealing with surfaces, so wear your gloves, wipe things down, have your sanitizers, and I think you're good.
And let's go to Karen in Plant City, who's been waiting a while. Karen, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Comment and a little feedback from Dr. Harvey. And good morning.
Good morning.
I know you have a lot of folks interested in your show, and they should be. I see so many things pointing to nutrition and good choices, and I'm wondering if we couldn't put a little bit of feedback out to folks that have been gardening. Want to start gardening, I run the community garden in Plant City, as Rob knows. We've had a lot of new members since all of this outbreak, and I see people in a very easily social distancing situation, outside getting vitamin D, growing really nutritious and super fresh foods that are high in antioxidants when they're that fresh.
So. Absolutely. This is a brilliant thing, and I think we're going to see the resurgence of the victory garden. I think we need to go back to that World War II concept, and everybody needs a victory garden. My organic farmer son has transformed my entire yard. I have no grass any longer. We're about ready to plant sun hemp in the front to kill nematodes and add nitrogen to the ground before we put the food in the fall. The backyard already producing food, papayas, passion fruit, Seminole pumpkins, tomatoes, sweet potatoes. I'm feeding myself a lot, and I think we all need to do that. We will succeed in creating a great society if we do this.
Karen, how can people join your community garden in Plant City?
Everybody's welcome to visit whatever community garden is near them. We are a part of the Coalition of Community Gardens, and there's like over 30 gardens now, and in a 3-county area, so we're growing. We are Plant City Community Gardens at 2001 East Cherry Street. We're on the south side of the HCC Plant City campus, and we're open to visit sunrise to sunset every day.
Fantastic.
Right. Karen, that's good information. We're out of time. So sorry. Fred, thank you so much for driving up from Sarasota.
So much appreciated. Thanks to have me here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We are separated from by plexiglass, and Fred is wearing the proper...
Gear?
Gear. Thank you. So we'll see you in 2 weeks?
In 2 weeks.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Health and Nutrition Program here on 88.5 FM. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, and points beyond. Here's the latest news from NPR.